1,100 men went into the water. Vessel went down in 12 minutes. Didn't see the first shark for about half an hour. Tiger, 13-footer, you know that when you're in the water, Chief? You tell by looking from the dorsal to the tail. Very first light, Chief. Sharks come cruising. So we formed ourselves into tight groups. You know, it's kind of like old squares in a battle, like you see in a calendar, like the Battle of Waterloo, and the idea was, shark comes to the nearest man, that man, he start pounding and hollering and screaming. Sometimes the shark go away. Sometimes he wouldn't go away. Sometimes that shark, he looks right into you, right into your eyes. You know the thing about a shark, he's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eyes. When he comes at you, he doesn't seem to be living until he bites you. And those black eyes roll over white, and then... Oh, then you hear that terrible high-pitched screaming. The ocean turns red, and in spite of all the pounding and the hollering, they all come in and they rip you to pieces.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Phantom Galaxy. I'm your host, Nathan Bartlebaugh, and I'm joined tonight with Chris Durham. Chris, how's it going?
It's going great.
So, we just came from screening of 47 Meters Down, the new shark movie with Mandy Moore, and...
Where's she been all these years? Because I haven't...
Mandy Moore? She's been... I think she's on a TV show. She may be on Parenthood.
Oh, okay.
I think on network television. But... She's a lot on the Disney Channel. She did the voice for Tangled a few years ago. And she's also done Cat Sheriff in an Old West Town in a cartoon. I think it's Sheriff Callie.
That explains why I don't know her, because she's completely outside like the circles of things that I watch.
Yeah, so. I don't think she's done much. I remember back in the day she did Walk to Remember and Saved and a couple of other
movies.
Those
are the only two movies I can think of remember like her name being in. I never watched either of those. But
there were a couple of others, but I mean that's primarily... There haven't been a lot. So tonight we're going to talk about the new shark movie that's out, just in time for summer, just in time for the beach. And we're going to go in and talk about shark movies in general. And this is going to be kind of precursor. We wanted to do what I like to consider the seafood movies.
Yes.
With all manners of sea creatures popping up and wreaking havoc. But there's just so much
that
I think we need to do two different episodes. So tonight we'll do this. We will be back to give you the full breadth of the sea creatures. And hopefully, maybe I can find a killer manatee movie. I'm really looking.
That would be brilliant.
I know of one that featured a ghost manatee, but I don't know if we get a full-fledged like manatee. I think a sci-fi would be good if it had like dugong versus manatee. They're kind of the same thing, but
or prehistoric dugong.
Giant sea lion versus manatee. Yeah. I would watch that.
Who wouldn't?
Exactly. So, but before that, I want to introduce a new segment to Phantom Galaxy, which is the Phantom Rants section. So the idea is, you've heard us rant week in and week out here, but we want to give you, the listener, an opportunity to kind of drop us a line and let us know what kind of just irks you in regards to movies, books, genre. It can really be anything. We had an example of this. We've had some people just drop us some lines and let us know different things that, like, hey, we heard you talk about this. Don't forget to mention this thing. This thing really kind of bothers me. So I'd love to open it up and just hear some of your thoughts on... I've mentioned things like, for me, the way fathers are treated in movies. Talked about that kind of like absentee dad or the dad who just doesn't do anything right, you know. I think everybody's got their like pet peeve. So Chris, a friend of yours, brought up... he was talking about the show and brought up something in regards to horror films that just really, really bugs him.
And interestingly enough, kind of bugs me too.
Yeah, I think it's a legit point, and it's probably a great episode to bring it up because we're talking tonight about sharks, which
yes,
of course
right.
have those black glossy
dead eyes,
like a doll's eyes.
Soulless.
Yes. Yeah. And you wanna lay this out for us?
Yeah, basically, my buddy Brian emailed. He's like, you know, you guys gotta at least at some point talk about how they overuse over and over, just repeatedly, possession movies where the eyes roll back and turn black like all the time. And it's so true. It's in everything I can think of where a possession is involved. Almost every single time you'll see the eyes roll back in their head, and all of a sudden there'll just be these black soulless eyes for the person being possessed.
And it's actually, like, way overused.
Way overused.
In the last 10, 15 years.
Absolutely. I mean, you have stuff like Supernatural, where you get the demons all the time, and that's like the effect.
And it's kind of a shtick. And of course, the X-Files had the black ooze, mm-hmm. which kind of came down over the eyes. What I think was kind of interesting about this is when you brought it up, when we were talking about it, when Brian mentioned it, we then went last week to two movies, The Mummy
yep.
and It Comes at Night.
Yeah.
And both of those movies, in different ways, used a variation on the black, dead-eyed mm-hmm. Characters. The Mummy traded out, you know, black soulless eyes for white soulless eyes, but essentially the same shtick.
Yeah, their eyes still rolled back. Yeah.
Just basically to show that a person has been possessed or taken mm-hmm. over. There's different elements to why it's happening in both movies, but it to me, that clearly demonstrates it's over. It's very overused.
And we can't come up with any kind of other visual cue anymore. Like, that's the only thing people can think of, too.
Oh, well, it's a shorthand. I think it's the same thing with the creepy black-haired girls, you know, that take the Japanese motif.
Mm-hmm.
And I think an interesting thing would be, well, when was the first example of the black-eyed character? But I think it goes back quite a ways, because anytime I think you get into the demon thing, the easiest shtick is, oh, we'll darken the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the time, one of the few times that it actually freaked me out, like when it wasn't used excessively, was Event Horizon back in like 97.
Yes.
Do you remember that? There's a scene
Absolutely.
Where Sam Neill,
mm-hmm.
he's been looking for his wife, and then she sort of shows up behind him, and the dead black, completely black pools of eyes.
Yes.
Now, we had the black oil at this point in X-Files, but something about the way that was done, it was very bracing, it got the point across, but now we just see it, and it's lazy.
Mm-hmm.
You look at all the effort that's been taken with different movies to demonstrate possession, like Exorcist, all the makeup effects and things
mm-hmm.
like that, and yet, well, here's black eyes that roll back and you're possessed. And often it's a shtick that's used when the demon is hopping in and out of people, like
mm-hmm.
Supernatural. Black eyes let you know who's possessed at what mm-hmm. moment. But to me, one of the creepiest elements I can remember of a movie that's not The Exorcist involving form of possession, this kind of body hopping, was the movie Fallen from 98
mm-hmm.
with Denzel Washington.
And the only way you could tell... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on it, but...
No, go ahead. You're absolutely right. Like, the possession is super subtle in that movie,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
It moves from person to person. The only way you can tell is they start singing the song as they're going along.
Singing the song and making eye contact with Denzel Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the people in the crowd, their faces establish recognition, and they start singing Time Is On My Side, like
mm-hmm.
by the Rolling Stones. Tell me that was not creepier than any of the black-eyed characters
they're
you've
very
ever seen.
Effective, yeah, absolutely.
But it seems to be, it's such an easy thing. Even my kids are like, oh, watch out, do they have black eyes there? It means they're evil. And it's, Amazon has a movie called, that you can watch on Amazon Prime, called Black Eyed Children. And it's literally, the person with the black eyes. And apparently,
wow.
This rabbit hole probably goes too deep for me tonight. This seems to be a documentary. So
what?
You explain that to me. So anyone who's listening to this, let us know. What do you think? Are the black eyes, in terms of a possession, the eyes going completely black, no pupils, no anything, is that a little bit overplayed? Is it a little bit overdone? I think that it is. What can they do? There's probably plenty of things that they can do, but they just don't seem to be interested in being original when it comes
yeah.
to possession movies. Honestly, I would say just stop making possession movies at this point.
I haven't seen
We've
an original
seen
possession movie in a long
many.
Time. Yeah.
There's, well, you know, there was The Taking of Deborah Logan on Netflix.
That one I
like
did not
that.
See.
Oh, pretty
yeah.
good. I would recommend
I've heard
that
good
to anyone.
Things to that one.
I can't, honestly, I can't in all honesty tell you whether there were black eyes or not. I don't remember. The Last Exorcism don't know about the black eyes there. But the other thing that bothers me is the contorting of the body. Mm-hmm. Last Exorcism had that. So, Brian, feel free to check out Black Eyed Children on Amazon. Yeah. But it sounds like you're just about done with this trend, and so are we. If you have a rant that you want to submit to us, you can hover to the Facebook page, which is currently still Pop Culture Ninja, or you can hit us up on Twitter, which is Phantom Galaxy, which is Phantom, FANTOMGALAXY. You can also just search for Phantom Galaxy. If you want to send us an email, that is phantomcasts@gmail.com. Okay, Chris, let's talk 47 meters down.
Let's do it.
It's going to be the best vacation ever.
Seriously, you have to try.
I don't even know how to dive.
It's totally safe.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like you're going to the zoo, except you're in the cage.
I don't know about this.
Welcome aboard.
There! Look! It's huge.
Remember, the faster you breathe, the faster you use up your air. Trust me, once you're down there, you're not going to want to come back up.
This is amazing. It kind of takes your breath away. Oh my God. Like the biggest shark.
You take a picture of me?
Yeah. Sorry. We would like to come back up now.
I'm bringing you back up.
Oh my God. I'm so scared. We need to conserve our air.
How deep are we?
47 meters.
Last summer, we had The Shallows with Blake Lively kind of stuck on a mm-hmm. little bit of an atoll fighting a shark mm-hmm. for about an hour and a half. A fun summer action yeah. movie.
In and Out.
Yeah. Good performance by Blake Lively. Mm-hmm. Just enough kind of nuance and story set up. And then it's basically her and the shark. Shark, I wasn't super convinced by the CGI all the time. But I think that's a common issue
yeah,
with shark
absolutely.
Movies. One of the movies we'll be talking about later.
Talk about rants. That's one of my pet peeves. People can't do a convincing CGI shark these days.
Well, I think it's all in the swimming movements. You know, I think like a lot of times... Sometimes it's the coloring on the shark. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't look right, like in the water. Yeah. It looks like a cartoon. It reminds me of the old Nintendo version of Jaws.
Yeah,
like
I remember that.
Jaws
too,
would come
yeah.
across the screen. That was a fun game. I used to love playing that. Shallows worked for me, and mm-hmm. it seemed to work for a decent number of people because it was sort of a sleeper summer movie hit. Yeah. They're clearly hoping for something similar. Chris, what are your initial thoughts on it?
I thought it was an interesting one-time experience. Like, The Shallows, I could see myself popping in again once or twice. This one I enjoyed for what it was, kind of in the moment. The problem I had mainly with this one was the characters.
They're a little thin.
Little thin is right. And I don't mean just, like, body type thin. they're supposed to carry this whole movie.
Why don't you set the movie up for us, too? Because right, I realized yeah, we didn't even do that. No, I jumped the gun.
Two sisters go to Mexico to have vacations. Very basic premise. You know, they go out and have a good time. They meet some guys. The guys are like, hey, you doing anything cool? You know, you should check out this shark diving thing. They'll put you in a tank a few meters down into the water, and you'll see these amazing huge sharks. It'll blow your mind. It's truly spectacular. You know, and one of the sisters is not really interested in going. She's kind of freaked out by the whole thing. But the other one is more adventurous and is like, hey, you know, you need to rebound from your man, have a little fun, do something crazy. So they kind of decide to just go ahead and do it. So they go to the shady pier with a shady guy in a shady boat.
Matthew Modine looking pretty shady.
Very.
Looked like he's channeling Michael Caine's Hoagie character from Jaws 4.
Now you're jumping ahead too far.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. That's right. Yeah. All right, we'll skip that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, they go out to the, you know, they go out in the middle of the ocean and they go in this rusty shark tank, and things pretty quickly go bad, and they drop to the bottom of the ocean, like this crappy old boat.
47 meters down, yeah. to be precise. Yes.
And so in this scenario, like, not only are there sharks, massive sharks, and that's, you know, a pretty freaky thing if you're not looking forward to that. In that scenario, but like the environment itself is like basically trying to kill them. You can't just like escape the tank and just the shark tank and go as fast as you can to the surface because you'll get the bends and you'll die. You know, you can't stay underwater because you're not going to have enough air.
you can't, you know, get out of the tank because, you know, then you have the deal with the sharks. Like,
if this is a choose your own adventure, it always ends with you're going to die.
Yeah, pretty horribly, yeah. And then, like, another thing, too, about it, it makes this, I think this separates itself from other shark movies in that the environs are pretty dark, like at the bottom of the ocean. It's kind of murky. It's dark. You can't really see much around you. That adds up the freakiness to it a little bit. Like in some of the other shark movies, you know, you're looking at clear water and you see the shark coming at you. Down there, it's kind of hard to see.
It's very atmospheric. It's more about like evoking a mood than being about, here's that shark coming to chase
exactly.
you.
So this, it feels a little more like the whole environment's trying to kill them, not just the sharks. So I thought that was kind of a neat twist.
They're also not sure if the boat has left. There's a slight possibility that these guys...
Shady dudes, like I said.
Right, you know, who can be trusted.
Yeah. Yeah, so like they don't really know what's going to happen. And so it's an interesting survival story. But like I said, I think the biggest pitfall is that the girls are supposed to carry the movie into points where there's nothing happening. And there are long sequences of not much going on. But again, with the mood of... the ocean, the bottom of the ocean, was kind of has some tension just because of that. Their conversations back and forth, their characters are a little bit uninteresting. So I felt I was kind of bored for part of this movie, oddly enough, for a movie that you're supposed to just be thrilled. So I thought it was all right. I thought it was I guess, if you were to compare The Shallows and 47 Meters Down, I would say The Shallows probably is a better movie. But I think what really makes this one sell is the fact that when you do see the sharks, they're the most realistic, like, animated CG sharks I've seen so far. Like, they do the sharks really well. The sharks look like they're coming to bite your head off.
They're integrated well into the shots, too.
Yeah.
The way they come up, you're never, ever really just looking at a full-blown, here's a shark far away swimming slowly mm-hmm. towards you, or a whole CGI shark. You're always catching them sort of entering the frame from the bottom, the top, the mm-hmm. side. You're seeing a piece of the
very
shark moving.
Very lifelike way, too.
Yeah, I agree. And as far as the integration of the sharks go, it's really smooth and effective, which I'm wondering, you made a good point. Why is it quite taking this long to get to this level? Because...
yeah.
I mean, I watch like the Finding Nemo movies, and I'm like, why is the shark so well animated? I mean, minus the part where he's kind of friendly looking. Why is he so well animated here, but you can't get it right in, you know, the umpteenth shark movie that comes out? And this has some of the most bracing, I think, shark attack and the feel that the shark is right there with you and isn't just an animatronic head.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's probably the closest to like the threat of the shark you feel as it was in Jaws, like
absolutely.
back in the day. I basically agree with what you're saying about the character mm-hmm. differences between the... And I guess it's not necessarily completely fair to compare the two. I'd say in a lot of ways, tonally, this movie's more similar to Open Water from 2004.
I could see that.
Open Water, we had mentioned, too, a movie that we personally didn't like. Had no sharks in it, but a movie called Sanctum, where these divers were trapped in an underwater kind of aquatic mm-hmm. cavern. This is a better movie than that. It's a killer premise, no pun intended. I mean, it is. It's a cool, you know, ticking time bomb setting. Like you mm-hmm. say, they can't be here for very long or bad things are going to happen. And if they go out of the cage, bad things are probably going to happen. If they just sit still, particularly if the boat's gone, bad things are going to happen. They're just not a lot of good options.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're down there, the idea is, okay, you're in a pressure cooker, and what are we going to do? And the movie does a pretty good job, I think, and you alluded to this too, of creating an ambiance enough that it's a little bit of vicarious-like fear. Mm-hmm. Like, the fear that you feel is, oh, how horrible. You sit there and think about how horrible it would be if you were trapped at the bottom of the ocean in this, mm-hmm. like, big rusty cage. But outside of that, I agree that you don't feel a lot of concern or fear for the character on behalf of the characters mm-hmm. themselves.
Yeah.
So Claire Holt and Mandy Moore, I hadn't seen her in a while. I didn't even quite recognize her.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one of them are giving a particularly strong performance.
Mm-mm.
That's, I think, twofold. One, the movie in the dialogue portions isn't particularly well written. It's very perfunctory.
It's almost perfunctory that it feels sometimes like the dialogue you would see in a video game where you're you're playing along and the character is there and you have to have some dialogue so the person's in danger or telling you what to do. Oh, no, my air is running out. Oh, I managed to lift up the cage. That's the level. Am I wrong to say that's the level of the dialogue coming out of Mandy
Moore? No, you're absolutely right to say that.
There's a point when I think Mandy Moore literally says something like, the shark, it almost got me. Like, and people in the theater began to laugh, but it wasn't meant to be, like, it comes right after a very kind of harrowing scene. Mm-hmm. You don't need her saying, the shark almost got me. It's not there for comic relief. Mm-hmm. It's not there. It just seems, it's so chipper and bubbly. It's like she's still on a, like, Disney show somewhere. When she's like saying
yeah,
this, it's like disconnect. I think that's what you're getting at. Like their conversation at the bottom of the ocean is still about the heel boyfriend that left her. Like they're at the bottom of the ocean. They probably aren't going to survive. There are sharks around them, and they're
pardon
still
the pun, have bigger fish to fry.
Yes, and you are making. You're still talking about the single piece of character development you've given her, which is she had a boyfriend that dumped her, and she's sad, and she wants to be more like her fun loving sister, like that. But that's literally, that's about the level that we
pretty
get.
Much, yeah.
So, otherwise, we have to rely on what the director's showing us with the environment and the mortal peril they're in and of itself, to get the fear across, to get some of the anxiety across. And to a degree, I think that does still work. I think it's an effective movie, but it's an effective movie, like, right to a point. And I'm not saying, like, it stops being effective during its runtime. I mean, it does basically what it does, and then it just doesn't do anymore.
Yeah,
it has one thing it's trying to do, which is kind of create a tense sort of environment to give you about a tense hour and a half. It's in and out. It does. Yeah. I will say that doesn't linger.
Yep.
It was surprisingly, though, in the beginning, the very first 10 or 15 minutes, I really was getting some like nervousness, not to do with any kind of threat scenario, but the filmmaking, it just seemed very generic.
Super generic, yeah.
In the beginning. Although there were some lingering shots that you were mentioning. It's almost like Terrence Malick-y, the way things just sort of sit there and you're watching ocean ripples for several minutes.
I believe my reference was, this is the turn horse of shark movies.
That is true. I was not, I'm unsure.
It doesn't play out that way for most of the movie. Just a couple of shots where I was like, wow, this keeps going.
I was trying to decide if people would know more who Malick was or the turn horse. And maybe we have that audience that knows both.
Possibly.
Yes. Which, yeah, the movie does take time to slow down and just allow you to get into the, what you guess you could say, I don't want to say the emotion of the scene, but just the like tension of the scene. Mm-hmm. Like you're there long enough to feel like, okay, she's having problems breathing, mm-hmm. and you're watching. So she's disoriented. They are uncertain what's out there, and there's moments where you're just watching the flotsam and jetsam sort of come at their face, and that's a point when it does almost lull you into a trance. Which reminded me of the movie a few years back. You and I went to see a documentary called Leviathan, basically about a bunch of guys on a fishing trawler, but half of the time this thing was filmed from under the water looking up at the waves just crashing and the gulls coming down and the krill going through the, I mean, what a weird experience that was.
Interesting experience for sure.
Yes, but this is not that movie. This is still essentially a kind of, it's a little bit of a B movie, really. I don't, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel particularly built up. It doesn't even feel quite as strong as The Shallows, because again, Mandy Moore is no Blake Lively in terms of her acting. Mm-hmm. Blake Lively did a performance that I thought was very effective in the way she combated the shark. They had a little bit of stuff bubbling up under the surface thematically. Mm-hmm. These movies, I don't care what movie you're making, a lot of people will be happy to watch a movie where something dangerous and threatening happens, and they'll be along for the ride. But you always need a little bit of a theme, I feel like. You need to have a little bit of substance. You can still build that in.
Yeah, you have to care for the characters in some way to really get anything out of the movie. So I'm always for, give me a little something, you know?
They were very quick to get them to that scenario and get that scenario going. Same way with Open Water. Though Open Water, even Open Water had some tensions between the husband and wife as the movie goes along that doesn't necessarily endear them to you, but gives you some kind of human this was like, it was perfunctory. They just kind of dropped it in there and they remembered, oh, hey, maybe we should have a conversation before we have the sharks attack. But the shark sequences are cool. The whole gist of the movie is done pretty well.
There's a couple of good jump parts in that for me, actually.
This is, I think, yeah. And, I mean, I was never bored, but I also wasn't as engaged as I wanted to be, which I think is a fair point. You're right. This, I wouldn't go back and watch this again. I say this is basically a matinee. Yeah. I'd almost be tempted to say, wait for this on DVD or something, but
I think the immersive,
the screen, the movie does make make good use of that immersive kind of feeling of you're trapped under the water and the sharks. There's one point when the flare goes up and suddenly they're surrounded. I mean, but almost any time the sharks are on screen. Now, this, I think it's fair to say The Shallows I viewed as a PG-13 horror movie.
Yeah.
I view this as a PG-13 suspense film. Would you think that that's probably fair? This isn't really a horror film.
I agree 100%. Yeah.
The sharks are one, like you said, they're almost one element. Third of the troubles. They're not all the troubles. And the movie is very much attention. What are you going to do next? What's going to happen to
exactly.
you? And maybe it's because we watched so many bad shark movies in prep to this one that I feel like this is elevated a little bit. It's not in the high tier of shark movies.
I tell you what, if this was a movie they released on the Sci-Fi Channel, I'd be like, this is the best thing I have seen on
that's
TV
true.
Ever.
We talk about expectations. You know, like, and be like, this is a... But, you know, that's part of it, though, too. This had the feel of a really, like... high production TV movie more than it did a really big theatrical release.
Yes,
so
yes.
There is that. But I think you go to a matinee and you're into sharks. If you like sharks, this is a movie you're going to want to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so 47 Meters Down. It's comes out in theaters this weekend. And now we're going to delve into, dive down. Beneath the surface of the water is a realm of gliding monsters.
Yeah.
We're going to talk shark movies.
Awesome.
And last summer, we did the Spielberg retrospective, and I don't think you were with the podcast at that point, Chris, but we talked about, we went into a relative amount of depth on Jaws, the original Jaws. And I'll actually put in the show notes the link back to that so we can check it out.
To be fair, I was in when we were talking about E3 before you did that.
Oh, that's right. So you do predate, but you weren't a regular, but you were a guest. That's right, because you hopped in pretty close to the beginning. But I will put in the link so we can go over. You can check that out if you want to hear about. But we didn't talk about the sequels. So although now that I'm thinking about it, you mentioned E3, we did. Bob Blandenberger did talk about Jaws 3D, seeing Jaws 3D in the theater. So
yes,
there's your link. So I think we should just lump these all together and move on. What do you think about the Jaws sequels? I mean, I think it's fair to say nothing comes close to Jaws.
Considering I got them all on DVD at Walmart for like $7.50, like in a package.
That's about $2.50 too much.
Hey, I think it came with like a $5 off coupon to see something. So I ended up like not getting the best deal out of it because you realize that means I have to watch Jaws 3 and Jaws 4. Like, Jaws 2 is all right. It's not the best movie, but
I liken Jaws 2 to Halloween 2.
Yeah.
I think Halloween 2 is better than Jaws 2.
Quite a jump.
But they're still... Well, they're trying to cash in on the first movie. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make a legitimate sequel, but they kind of... They just end up being kind of a pale imitation. And in a lot of ways, they water down the movie that comes before. It's better just to pretend they don't exist.
I like the concept of the setting where all the teen kids are going off somewhere, and they all have their own boats, and they kind of try to survive a shark attacking them. But it's just not that compelling. Like, the shark they had for Jaws 2 was kind of lousy.
There's a really big bump downwards in the special effects, which is not the direction you should be going.
The bump really gets crazy when you go from Jaws 2 to Jaws 3.
But Jaws 2, and I think this was interesting, when we were talking about Spielberg, like, he passed on Jaws 2. He passed on a lot of movies, like King Kong, Superman, Jaws 2. I think passing on Jaws 2 was the right move.
Oh, totally.
And then it's funny, because I think in one of those Spielberg things, they were talking about trying to make an E.T. 2. That was almost the same thing. They wanted to be like a horror movie. And it was like... Jaws 2, I agree. It brings Roy
Scheider. That was a wild story. People need to listen to that. And you guys were talking about that. That was
crazy. Nuts. Yeah. And so for all the bad sequels we've gotten, you can always be happy that there's some we didn't get.
Yes.
So Jaws 2, I think, is easy to just kind of bypass. You don't really need to see it. Mm-hmm. Unless you just absolutely want to see more sharks. Roy Scheider, I wouldn't say he's quite phoning it in. But he knows it's not on the same level. Mm-hmm. And it's largely because of what you said about 47 Meters. You don't have the depth. You don't have the great characters. There's no Robert Shaw, Quint kind of character to have. There's no Richard Dreyfuss character. There's no Hooper. You know, those three guys hunting that shark in the boat are really what make Jaws.
And the thing is,
rest
Jaws,
of it's good.
When you talk about that, Jaws is not much longer than like 47 meters down, maybe 20 minutes.
Is it? Oh, yeah, maybe.
But like, if you think about it, I think that like they did so much better with character development in a relatively similar time frame. Not,
well, I think Jaws is longer, but so there's not a lot of it that's
but I mean,
committed,
yeah, it's not committed to character
development.
But they did so much better with character development in the little bit of time they dedicated to it that all those characters are super like. When you think of Jaws, you're definitely thinking about Quint. You know, you're thinking about all these characters,
and that's what matters in a movie. I think,
yeah.
A shark is like the perfect killing machine. That's why it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still kind of a machine in our eyes. And that was one of the things that Peter Benchley, who wrote Jaws, kind of was always very reticent and actually kind of reluctant about it and kind of apologetic, was that he felt like he really cast sharks in a very bad light, that people just viewed them as killing machines and things to be destroyed, and that they were, that in some ways, at least biologically, that there's a lot more that's more interesting about sharks than just the fact that they can bite you. But for a horror movie, you don't get a quicker representation of fear than a shark gliding through the water, and you're there, and you can't quite
it
see what's below you.
It hits you on a primal level when you see it coming at you.
So a shark is can be a very cheap sort of thing to use, because you're going to evoke some fear immediately. Mm-hmm. But then it's up to you, how are you going to make your movie interesting? And I think that's the thing of the characters. So let's just add 3D. That'll solve our problems.
Oh, my God. So Jaws 3D is such a mess. What really stands out to me in this movie is truly the very special effects that he's in. The downgrade in quality from even Jaws 2, which was not the tippy top of the shark game. The shark they had in this thing looked like a mess. And
we're getting to like Golden Globus levels of production quality.
Like, I think it was even worse than Jaws 4.
What's interesting...
I actually think that's a valid statement. I think the Jaws 3D shark was worse than Jaws 4.
Neither one of those movies deserve me or anyone else to try and argue that point. I'll give you that.
I'm not saying Jaws 4 was a better movie. I'm just saying the shark was like slightly less bad.
Well, there's a couple of big problems with special effects. One of them is, to get that 3D effect, there's a weird kind of like matte, like layered look to the shark where it doesn't even look like it's in the same frame of the scene.
No, it does not. Yeah.
And there's a scene where they try to make it look like the glass is breaking on this aquatic tunnel, because it's like at a SeaWorld setting, and you've got Beth Armstrong training dolphins. Dennis Quaid is in this movie. Lou Gossett Jr.
Yes.
It has a cast that would have been a good cast. I mean, Lou Gossett Jr. and Dennis Quaid, the same year or the year before, had just been in Enemy Mine together, which is a fun sci-fi movie. And then they're in this piece of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And this shark is coming towards the enclosure, the enclave, and it hits up against it. You see the there's a visual glass pane here that shatters.
Yeah.
There's the shark. Then there's the background. It looks awful.
It does look terrible.
I mean, and this
and it's funny, is like, that's the 3D, but like when you watch the non-3D version or whatever, it still just looks just as bad.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just miserable.
It's a slop-together movie. This is Jaws 3. I feel like the Jaws movies and the Superman movies have a very similar trajectory.
Interesting.
Now, Superman 2 is much better than Jaws 2. But after that, they get much junkier. These are movies, in today's world, when we get a sequel now to a hit movie, they give it a bigger budget.
Yeah.
But then back then, after a certain point, if the movie didn't make quite enough money, like, we'll keep making this thing, but we'll just keep throwing less and less money at more and more ridiculous things.
Yeah.
I mean, the things that happen in Jaws 2 and Jaws 3, budget-wise, are on a bigger, grander scale than what's in Jaws. But the money is, it's just not on screen. Now,
but
part
this,
of that,
this thing takes place at this massive aquatic park, which you'd think would look awesome.
To be fair, the quality of director is also not there. I mean, you have no one on a Spielberg level. But Jaws 3 has dolphins fighting the shark.
Yes.
And a freeze
frame. Don't get into the dolphins. That is my favorite part of that movie. It's so bad. I say favorite only because it's the most atrocious thing you'll ever see. Like, the freeze frame at the very end, where they have the dolphins coming out of the water. It's
as,
like a light
as Dennis Quaid and Beth Armstrong are embracing it. And the dolphins. And it looks like...
It looks like some cheesy postcard someone got from somewhere.
It looks like a 1990s girl's Trapper Keeper cover. If it had a Saturn and a white tiger on the side, it would have been a Trapper Keeper cover. But then They still can't leave well enough alone. Like, you have three Jaws movies. You need no more
Jaws
movies.
Why stop now?
Yeah. Jaws, The Revenge, this time it's personal, except it really isn't personal, and it has almost nothing to do with the other movies.
It is personal, only in the sense that now Jaws apparently knows its enemy. It's like, it's the human beings that it's trying to kill.
Where do all these sharks keep coming from?
I don't know. But apparently it knows the bloodline of the Brodies, because it goes after, like, Brody's son back in Amity at the beginning, and kills him off, which begins this, like... I forget exactly what happens, but I remember Brody's wife now being a widow. She's like, oh, I need to take a vacation. So she goes to, like, Jamaica or something. And Mario Van Peebles is in that.
Mario Van Peebles and?
Okay, so Michael Caine's greatest performance, clearly, Hoagie. There's a dude named Hoagie on the island that runs a little plane around. He's like a taxi
You just
cab.
Imagine him looking at a script and be like, right now, Hoagie. And how much am I getting paid?
Yeah.
That's his quote. Like, he came out of the screening.
Well, I mean, he's clearly drinking the whole time they're making this thing. I mean, he's a drunken sea captain, or, like, drunken air captain.
That's method acting, my friend.
Yeah.
This movie also has a lot of scenes of sharks exploding, right? Like,
at the end, that's what happens.
Yeah, but really badly.
For no reason, because it's not the shark itself doesn't have a bomb or anything in it. They throw, like, a radio device in it, and it explodes once it hits, crashes with a ship. For no reason. Like, there's no explosive device in it.
There's no understanding of what a shark is by the time you even get to Jaws 4. So,
it doesn't know what it is as a franchise.
And thankfully, I will say this, I think we can all be thankful for the fact that somehow Jaws managed to never get a remake, to have no more sequels. It got out of the 80s, and we've never seen another Jaws movie, which I think we at least have that to be grateful for.
I'm very grateful for that, because that thing is a mess.
So, and when we do the second part, which is, again, the broader world of sea creature movies,
there were
some other shark movies. There were some Italian shark movies. There was Shark versus Zombie.
There was an Italian shark movie called The Last Jaws.
Yeah, they had a couple. There was one of the devilfish that was like a shark Dinoscilus hybrid, like a prehistoric fish crossed with an octopus, crossed with a shark or something. They played a Mystery Science Theater. It looked like a giant papier-mâché mess. It was a Lamberto Bava movie. So, high quality. And then, really, most of the other shark movies come a little bit later. You know, we kind of have a resurgence later on. And the resurgence I remember happening sort of around the 90s when we had... It's interesting because right before we started this, in between seeing the movie and starting the podcast, you pointed out to me that they're prepping the fact that they're finally putting Meg into production.
Yes.
So if anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, Meg, which is short for Megalodon, which is giant prehistoric shark, this was based off of a novel in the 90s, I think.
Yeah,
we were talking
about it then.
Yeah, and in the 90s, this movie was slated. It had stars. I think Patrick Stewart was going to be it.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the roster. It was supposed to roll out and be a competition for Deep Blue Sea. This was a time when one studio couldn't make a movie without someone else making another one. You know, you had Ants. It was going to be Ants and Bug's Life and Deep Impact and Armageddon. And then you're going to have Deep Blue Sea versus Meg. And Meg just never actually got off the ground. It was supposed
surfaced?
Yeah, never surfaced. Well played, my friend. It was supposed to open with a scene of like a T-Rex standing next to a watering hole, and the megalodon just jumping out of the water and grabbing it with his mouth.
So cheesy, but so awesome.
And this is well before we had all those like thousands of sci-fi channel shark movies, which I'm sure we'll discuss in a minute. But we don't get Meg. We're now going to get Meg next year, though. You point out it's going to be directed by John Turteltaub, who is the director of the National Treasure movies. I like the first National Treasure, but I don't think he's a director. He's not a director that breeds confidence, I think, for a big multi-million dollar shark movie.
Strange move there, but also starring Jason Statham.
that I like Statham sometimes, but that's also a little bit of cause for...
If
like,
The Rock's not in there, it'd be like, if this is not their follow-up movie for like Fast and Furious spinoff, where The Rock and Jason Statham battle each other while also having to deal with a megalodon, I'll be disappointed.
I'd be up for that.
I would totally love to see that. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of this stems from the fact that they were able to sell that scene in Jurassic World where the, like, Mosasaur comes down and eats the shark.
Yeah.
You know, and they looked at that and said, you know what, it's time to bring Meg back up. Bring Meg out
that
of her retirement.
That maybe it, yeah. They said August of 2018, so we'll see if that date sticks, you know. Hopefully. We've been talking about it for freaking 20 years, so.
Could be a real turd. You're going to need a bigger butt.
Yeah.
But Deep Blue Sea did come out. We did get Rennie Harlan's Deep Blue Sea.
Rennie Harlan, all right.
What do you think about Deep Blue Sea?
I freaking love Deep Blue Sea. It's stupid, it's cheesy, but it's so entertaining.
It has some really bad cartoon sharks, too. Like, really bad, bad cartoon sharks.
But it's still so much fun. Like, I can pop that thing in at any time and, like, watch it 7 times in a row. It's so fun.
7 times in a row. It is a fun movie. I'm not going to dispute that. It's your basic survival horror action movie where you've got a bunch of characters. Not so much Alien, but the Aliens template where you have a bunch of characters trapped in a compound trying to get out. In fact, it's pretty much almost the same movie as Alien Resurrection. You know, the government, this entity is trying to do research on something and they mess it all up. It's Jurassic Park, too. It's just about any kind of generic
anytime
tamper with nature.
That's
what interesting, though, that the mad scientists in this movie have they have a humanitarian bent. They want to cure Alzheimer's by messing with the shark's brainwave.
Taking out, shark juice out of their spines and brains or something.
Yeah, and so they've increased their intelligence, and it's just like such a silly, goofy premise.
Let's make sharks with big brains. Oh my God.
And yet, you know, there's some actors there we haven't really seen before. Saffron Burroughs, who I like, but whose career never quite took off. Thomas Jane, whose career took off and then kind of didn't.
Yeah.
Though he's still around. But LL Cool J was in there. And
rapping a song, too.
That's right. My hat is like a shark's fin.
Head is
right?
like a shark's fin at the end. Yeah.
It's a silly, goofy movie. Samuel L. Jackson, who shows up as this kind of billionaire who's going to throw money at this...
down-to-earth billionaire. That was an important element.
Yeah. And I feel like what they did, they wrote this script, and they made the most generic... by the numbers action movie you could possibly make. They took every character and did exactly what you would expect with them. And then they took that script, and it may have even happened later, because I believe that some of this movie was tested in front of audiences, and they responded to it and said, well, wait, we don't want that. We'd rather have this. It's almost like they take all this, they make it, and then they look at it and say, you know what? It would be better if we just did the complete opposite of this. And it's almost it's almost at the level of a Scream movie, in the sense that it's not that meta-awareness, but it almost sometimes feels like that, because there seems to be such a constant, let's shake up your expectations.
Yeah.
You think that person's going to die? This person's going to die. Mm-hmm. You think this is going to happen? That's going to happen. I mean, it's from the very beginning of the movie, when you have a bunch of like kids partying on a boat, and the shark is coming up, and it's the moment where the shark's going to eat all the kids, and you're going to know these sharks are a threat. But just as the shark goes to bite them, boom, it's captured. And these are the guys reeling it back in to take it back to this underground facility, which opens up that storyline, you know? And I'm not going to spoil the rest in case you guys actually haven't seen it, but there's one death scene that everyone who's seen this movie remembers, and it's glorious. But LL Cool J, I'm not going to go into exactly what happens with him, but originally his character was there's a tense sequence that involves him kind of early on. He wasn't supposed to survive that. And in fact, I think in the first cut of the movie, well, they realized that, because when they were testing it, everyone's like, we like this guy. We want to have more of this guy. Mm-hmm. And so the decision was, well, let's keep him in there. And it's fun. It's got the goofy one-liners. It's got goofy shark action. Mm-hmm. But it's a fun movie, and it understands, I think, that the sharks can still be threatening and thrilling if the movie they're in is. Even if the sharks aren't... like, there's the scenes of the sharks swimming backwards, and I can't quite explain it, but the way they move just doesn't look right. They move too quickly, which I think is why they look fake. I think that's the problem with trying to get a like realistic-looking shark.
Yeah.
The sharks are not impressive as special effects, but they do work as like basically giant tanks with teeth that want to chew you to pieces.
I'm so disappointed I never saw it on the big screen, because by the time it had come out, I remember I went to pick it up, and it was with my mom at the time, And I went to this guy, the guy at the register. He's like, hey, you got any good action movies, you know, out or whatever? And so he's like, oh, yeah, you should check out Deep Blue Sea over there. That's a pretty good shark movie. And I was like, oh, sweet. Maybe I can let my mom swing past this one because it's rated R. You know, maybe we can convince her to let me rent this one. The guy gives me the most detailed breakdown you could possibly give anybody of, okay, yes, I believe there are maybe only two or three F-bombs in this movie. They did not use this word.
He's like, I've just finished writing my Common Sense Media article about it. Would you like to read it?
It was great. He's just like, oh, this is not too terribly damaging. And so my mom's like, okay, fine. We'll rent it, you know. And, I loved it. It was a great movie.
I remember Stellan Skarsgård was in that one too.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have this, and what are we looking at? And this shark is carrying a guy on a stretcher to throw at them. The smart sharks angle made it funnier too.
Yeah,
I will say this, I blame this movie for all of the sci-fi movies about sharks that we got after
you would
it.
Be fair to do
I so. Think that they realized, they say, look, we could take this template, this goofy thing, and make movies out of it. But
they
this
copy
is,
it exactly with Sharknado, because, you know, that one,
yeah.
What's the point of Sharknado? Oh, now sharks are where people normally are. They think they're safe on land, but they're not.
It's an action movie, and you've got the sharks there.
I adore that movie. It's great.
Then on the big screen, we do get Open Water, which mm-hmm. Open Water is really the found footage shark movie, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's not when you say shark movie, because there's more going on to sharks, yeah. But it is that kind of...
It's going to give you a fear of the ocean.
Yeah, and it really is. And if you've ever been out in the ocean at all, and it's that moment when you just realize, wow, this is really big. You have that moment of thinking, you know, it's funny, we were talking to my son, I was talking to some relatives who had actually gone like to Easter Island. They're talking about the Pacific Ocean. You just have to have respect for it. And Johnny later says, the Pacific Ocean will kill you, and you're not going to get another life. God will not bring you back like a video game. I'm like, fair enough. You see, we've taught our child some healthy fear.
Don't go in the water.
You will not respawn. So, but that movie captures that pretty well. I don't think it's the best movie in the world. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of still like a one-time watch. I saw it one time years ago.
I never really got to the first viewing.
You were very... You kind of like were a little resistant to it, and I don't think you have... Like, with some of those found footage movies, there's always that point where you either have to just go with it, or
I think part of it was, too, that the characters, again, I didn't really care for them, and they were not helping me enjoy the movie.
I think the goal of the characters in this movie is a little different, where we're supposed to feel they're so realistic, they're having the arguments, they just end up in this situation, there's nothing special about them, that it's supposed to enhance this feeling of reality, allow you as a mm-hmm. as a viewer to step into, oh my goodness, what if this happened to me? Mm-hmm. And I think to a degree that's effective, but that is going to be narrow, not everyone's going to be able to step into that mm-hmm. experience. What the creepy scenes of this are when they're just out there and you're just watching their heads kind of bob along mm-hmm. and something that they don't know what exactly just touched your foot, yeah, you know, and what's going on. And there's a couple of great shots of where you'll just see under the water and there's just sharks swarm, different mm-hmm. kinds of sharks swarming around them. Conclusion of the movie was kind of haunting. It's kind of one and done. I know they made mm-hmm. a sequel. Seth tells me the sequel was actually worth watching. I actually haven't. I don't know that I will. Mm-hmm. To me, it was kind of like a one-time... Mm-hmm. A one-time thing. But if you haven't seen it, and you are someone who wants to kind of get that, appreciates more the horror aspect of the shark and the being in the ocean, you really want to, for whatever reason, have that freaky experience, I think Open Water is going to be a little bit more on that realistic, hey, this could happen. And mm-hmm. Deep Blue Sea is not. It's a complete like fantasy, and you won't find that same level of terror. So I recommend Open Water, but I think it's with the caveat that there's not a lot there after the mm-hmm. initial viewing, which is probably fair to say of 47 Meters Down. There's two more movies I want to talk about, but Chris, should we do our sci-fi rundown?
Yeah, I think, you know, now is as good a time as any. We're going to get the goofy out of the way, you know?
I mean, we don't have a lot left, really.
Might as well, yeah. I broke a promise to myself for this podcast. I promised myself I would never watch any of the Sharknado movies. You have to realize that I used to, like, stay home on Saturday nights to watch the sci-fi original movies. They would pop up, you know. And after a certain point, I realized, like, I am really just wasting time of my life watching these things. Because with the exception of maybe one or two, I never actually even enjoyed any of them.
They were a little better when they first started out. Like, when They were direct-to-video movies, but now there's so many. I saw one as like Shark Lake with like Dolph Lundgren or something.
Yeah.
I hope he punches a shark, but I don't know that he does.
It might be. So at a certain point, I was like, you know what? No more Asylum movies for me, because Asylum used to make all of them. Every single weekend, it was an Asylum movie. Or
Corman. Roger Corman would be.
Or Roger Corman. I think he did a few of those, yeah. Like Sharktopus.
The Sharktopus preceded Sharknado.
Yes.
And
so, coming from the perspective, I was just done with these movies. I said, I'm never going to watch any of these Sharknado movies. But I said, for this, I'm going to break down and watch one. So I watched the first one. And I'll give them this. It's still a tiny, minor, microscopic budget that they had for this thing. But they knew their limitations. So they're like, you know what? We want to do some pretty crazy, wild things with this. And the special effects aren't going to be great. But we're going to treat it as if it is. And, like, they do their best with the limited amount that they have.
They are acting like, and I think that's what makes it, it's not a movie. They're treating it like an event. There's probably a fifth one coming out. Last year was like Sharknado, the Fourth Awakens. Yeah. And it's so silly. Even the violence in the movie is so silly that, like,
a kid could
watch it. And by a kid, I mean my five-year-old. We sat and watched it on TV, Johnny and I, and he was laughing the whole time.
That's the level it is. Like, it's just a goofy,
it's silly. I mean, there are moments when the sharks bite people, but it's just... It's absurdity. It's just pure absurdity. Someone says, what if sharks got sucked up in a tornado? And it could be anything. It could have been rabbits.
It's an idea they stole from me, by the way. I've gone on record that they stole this idea because I've been saying it for years.
That there should be a storm of sharks?
No, I was like, not that there should be, that there will be eventually. At one point, we're going to have a tornado over the water spouts, and it's going to pick up sharks that are in the water, and then we're all screwed because then we'll have flying sharks. I think actually I heard somewhere recently that there was like they had this extreme water storm. It might have been Australia or something, but there was somewhere like a country road after this massive storm the next day. There was just like a shark laying out on this dirt road.
That's interesting.
It's kind of weird.
Which would lead into one of our movies in a moment. But Day After Tomorrow featured no sharks, but I think you always maintain that it should have.
Oh yeah,
right. Like when everything melts and the water comes in, then why has this become a movie where they're now running from sharks?
Right.
Which I have an Australian film called Bait, which we'll get to, which is kind of sort of happened in that movie.
So okay, Sharknado. I'll just wrap it up real quick. Terrible movie. If you're six beers in, you might enjoy yourself a little bit,
or you're between 5 and 12,
or that too. Yeah, I had no beers in me that night, so I didn't really get much enjoyment out of it. But I could see, like, if in the right mindset, you might enjoy it.
It seems to be made
bit.
For people to tweet and like half watch it.
Like, oh my god, look at the,
like,
goofy thing that just happened.
Which is in a way kind of a very, like, it just has a level of crap. You're not even supposed to be watching.
It's
this
not
as a
even
movie.
A movie. You're right.
And that's true of most of these things. But it is amusing to look at all of them and find that all the different variations try to do with sharks. Sharktopus, I kind of enjoyed a little bit. Sharktopus is a level of schlock above Sharknado.
I agree. Yeah.
First off, I like the way he looks and the fact that he comes out on like land and he kind of like shoots his tentacles out and spears people like they're meat-filled Twinkies and just pops them into his mouth. And he's a shark head on a little octopus body. And Eric Roberts is in that movie. Was the best line of the movie when he says, "I will kill Sharktopus, but first bring me an enormous scotch." Which I don't know if he was in character or not at that moment. But, I mean, it's ridiculous garbage. But, you know, that's kind of what Corman has always specialized in.
Yeah.
And you're watching on Sci-Fi or whatever, you expect that from Sharktopus. And they also have the Sharktopus cam, which is always, like, aimed right at the hindquarters of his female human co-stars.
Surprisingly pervy, yeah.
Dino Shark. We had Dino Shark.
Yes, we did.
Now, Sharktopus, we paired...
Dino Shark, I remember, it was just like, there was some, like, ancient dinosaur DNA in, like, an iceberg. It was an egg or something, and somehow it hatches, and it's this massive, horrible shark we've never thought existed before.
And it's not even, like, a paleontologically known kind of dinosaur or shark.
Yeah.
It's just a thing they made up.
It's just a thing.
And this one really feels like an old 50s monster movie. It's
kind
actually not that terrible either. It's about on the same level as Sharktopus.
Mm.
He's not as cool as Sharktopus.
Yes.
But then later, don't we get Sharktopus versus Terra Cuda? Or Terraconda.
Yeah, they
it's like a pterodactyl mixed with an... Okay, there you go. It was a pterodactyl and a barracuda. I'm not sure how... I'm not even kidding. It flew, and so dinosaurs...
Well, hey, if Godzilla can fight Mothra, why can't we have...
Yeah, and of course we had... The asylum thing that spawned all the asylum things was Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, which is a horrible movie with almost zero entertainment value except to watch Debbie Gibson mug around.
Man, they really loved like filling her in a bunch of roles as much as possible.
Well, because they had her in that, and then Tiffany was in Mega Piranha.
Yes.
About filled out.
Didn't they fight each other at one point? At one point, they had like a
they
little
had
cat
a cat fight.
Yeah.
Involved whipped cream and cakes and whatnot.
Ridiculous.
And that was Mega Python versus Giant Who Croc knows? Or something. Gatoroid.
I tell you what, I
pride myself
audience.
On being able to memorize this. Well, there was one. It was like Mega Shark versus like Mega Titan, and it was a robot. It was like not even a robot shark. It was like a robot versus a
wow. That's
they've had robots. They've had Ghost Shark, which was trying to get revenge on the guy who killed it. It was a literal
what?
Ghost Shark. I'm not making
no.
It
that's
up,
Jaws
ghost shark.
4 territory right there. Dear Lord,
Ghost Shark, Avalanche Sharks, where the sharks are popping up out of the snow. They've had Sand Sharks. The sharks have been in space at some point.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Hammerhead, which was the genetically altered half-human shark, which they did. Peter Benchley did a book called Creature, which had the kind of shark, humanoid shark creature. And that was made into a movie or a miniseries with Craig T. Nelson.
Ooh.
Back in the 90s. Not particularly great. Dam sharks. So that's the one where sharks build dams out of human bodies to like
what?
To block the water.
Dang. That is on the almost the same level of like just pure insanity. This one is probably not even worth watching, but I saw a trailer for it. It's called like 90210 Shark Attack. It involves an amulet of a shark. Like a special shark spirit or something that is imbued in a girl. So half of her torso is a girl and half of her torso is a shark eating people.
Wait, the top half is a shark?
Yes.
That's
I
ridiculous.
Will show you the trailer.
That's
it's
like,
awfully bad.
That's like in Moana, shark head. Then they also, of course, had the multi-headed, where we'll just throw another head on the shark. Two-headed shark attack, three-headed
shark attack. Yeah.
I think Brooke Hogan was in one of those
probably.
Movies. And I think...
she needs the paycheck.
I think, too, our boy Danny Trejo was
probably... Three-headed, that's right, because I almost clicked on that one because I saw his mug. I was going through...
He's
like,
not a market quality, let's be honest. I mean,
no,
these
but if
days,
you're going to watch like something you know is going to be awful so that you can talk about it, you might as well watch.
I liked
Danny
him better
Trejo.
Than in Sci-Fi Channel's Iborgs.
That's digging.
Which
deep.
Is where these sentient cameras try to take over the world. That
oh
was
my
god. That was a fun movie. I liked it. So we could talk about the sci-fi level shark movies probably.
I'll say
forever.
This though. There was one it was I didn't watch it, it's probably terrible, but it was called like Raiders of the Lost Shark.
Yeah, I sent it to you last night hoping you would click on
I'd
it.
I'd already seen it. I'd already seen like I hadn't watched the movie, but I'd seen it in like the cues of various things. The art they have for these things now, these shark movies, is insane.
It looks like an old Italian movie from the 80s, but it's not, and so we can pretty much be assured it's not worth watching.
Yes. You're like, this movie looks amazing. Or Shark Exorcist, where you've got a demonically possessed shark.
Wait, that's for real?
Yes. It had like 1.5 stars like out of 10. I don't think it's worth your time, but... The poster for it looks incredible. Like, they have some really good artwork for these, very creative artwork, but none of that creativity makes it into these movies.
I'll try to watch at least the trailer, whoever out there, if you're listening, who made Raiders of the Lost Shark. let's finish up with a couple. There have been a couple big theatrical, not big, but there have been a few theatrical attempts. A few years ago, David R. Ellis, who's made garbage like Snakes on a Plane, did Shark Night 3D.
Ugh.
He went.
I was even excited for that. I was like, it's been years since I've had a good shark movie.
He went on a binge where he made Snakes on a Plane, which was horrible. He made The Final Destination, that one that was in 3D, which was also horrible.
Yeah.
And Shark Night 3D, which...
I think that was the peak of his, like, horrible...
It's a bad movie.
Yeah,
I mean, it's nothing...
Unwatchable.
That's about right. It's a group of... Young 20-somethings
I would put this at this lower level than Asylum, because at least Asylum has no money to make these turds. He had money.
And it has a couple of halfway decent actors, too.
Yeah.
They had Sarah Paxton in it, and she, who some people might remember from The Innkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a good actress. Year. Yeah, she is. But here, she just does nothing. The his name escapes me, Joel. He was in Avatar. He was Jake Sully's buddy, the guy who was more the, like the nerdy scientist guy. He was in a movie, indie movie called Spiral too, where he was kind of a disturbed young guy. And Donald Logue was in it too. I remember.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a fun B movie, but it was just it was so lazy.
It's super lazy,
And it was like, let's have all these different kinds of sharks.
Lots of potential.
You know, this suffers from the same problem as Snakes on a Plane, where someone throws out an idea in a chat room somewhere or in a message board and says, it would be great, a bunch of rednecks throw all kinds of different sharks and a lake and feed people to them. Yeah, that might have worked in the 80s when you'd had a just gonzo kind of Herschel Gordon Lewis type want to make a movie about it. But when people, all they do is take that log line and do it at its most limited, most lack of creativity.
Bankrupt.
Yes. It's most bankrupt, most, you know, derivative form. No one really cares. And people don't show up to watch it, not surprisingly. So, Chris, do you have any more movies in your repertoire? I have two to mention very quickly.
What are they? Because I may have been...
Both Australian films. One is called The Reef, and one is Bait.
Nope.
So... Reef, an Australian horror film that exists in that same world of the realistic shark that is somewhere between something like Open Water and something like The Shallows. You have a whole bunch of people kind of stuck out in a reef area with survival and escape, and between them, a giant, like, great white shark.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for thrills and setup, this movie's pretty high up there in terms of just maintaining a level of intensity. And really it being nothing else than, we're here, we need to get away, there's a shark. The pacing of the film is such, and the directing is such, that it kind of just is able to hone in on the horror in such a way that you're not really sitting there thinking about the character development angle. There's a mild bit of character development, but the tone of it, I think, just kind of keeps you going with it. So it elevates the movie enough that if you're looking for a horror movie, a shark horror movie, The Reef will fit that bill.
Mm-hmm.
Bait, on the other hand, has a kind of fun premise, which is this kind of tsunami comes in and hits a town, and with it brings a shark, probably several sharks, but one of these sharks has gotten into a convenience store and people are trapped in it. So it kind of feels a little bit like The Mist, but the characters aren't very interesting. The shark is that bad CGI. There's a moderate level of hokey fun to be had. There's a little Deep Blue Sea in there, but there's also, unfortunately, a little bit of Sharknado kind of Roger Corman level. So the movie never quite isn't that convincing. It's fun for maybe a beer and pizza night, like rental.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a little bit of fun out of it, maybe, but you do have to kind of set aside and say, I don't really care much for these characters. I like the idea of the shark in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. It's one of those movies you're kind of about 40% of your brain power is focused on it. So it's a little bit higher than all the sci-fi movies we mentioned. I think if you really do like shark movies, I think you can rent it for a couple bucks. A $3 rental is acceptable, I think, for Bait. The Reef, check out. Although I do have that funny, last night you sent me, I said to Chris, why don't you watch The Reef so we could discuss it? And you sent me back the screenshot and said, are you serious? And it's a picture of The Reef on Netflix, which was there up until just this last April, I learned. But the picture you sent me is these cute, cuddly little animated, it's like a Finding Nemo ripoff. And you're like, really, Nathan?
Surely you jest.
Yes, that's what it was. It's like, oh, sorry, man. So
you set me up again.
Yeah, and like I say, there is a Dolph Lundgren shark movie out there. I think it's called Shark Lake. That's about it. They still don't have. I mean, maybe Meg will be a great giant shark movie. Until then, what I think people could take away from this is, unless you want to go find The Reef or you want to go find Deep Blue Sea, 47 meters. If you're needing a little bit of shark action and you've already seen The Shallows and you've seen Jaws, go check it out. I mean, in the echelon of shark movies, it's
surprisingly high up there.
But I think it's fair to say don't go in expecting exclusively a shark movie. This is more of an underwater thriller where sharks play a rather large role.
Yeah.
All right, everyone, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We will see you again next time. Take care.
See ya.
With a double feature, it freak ass feeds, won't splash you beast. Their twisted fish, she suffers as a side dish. When you see that frenzy feeding, you will be the next bleeding shark to buzz.